Having fun today, getting ready for the Kings and, of course, the Warriors. Kyle Draper's in San Francisco, Whitey Gleason in Sacramento. And I was just thinking, Kyle, sports talk today on our sister station in Phoenix, probably not too jolly after the, you know, the D-backs last night. They were destroyed and they came back, but they lost. They're down, what, 3-1 now in the World Series. And then you had the Suns last night on national TV. And they had that game all but won against the young, inexperienced Spurs. And somehow, some way, those young Spurs came back and stunned the Suns in Phoenix. They were down 13 in the fourth quarter, and the Spurs beat the Suns 115 to 114. Did not see that coming.
How about that comeback? I mean, they scored 33 in the fourth quarter. And, you know, so much is being made about Victor Wembanyama, and he's truly great. Highlight reel every time he touches the floor. But Keldon Johnson, Devin Vassell, like, they got some young talent, some young pieces. Your boy Zach Collins, too.
Yeah.
You know, 14 points, three blocks, Gonzaga product. And so I feel like, you know, Greg Popovich joked, you know, people are saying, you know, Wembanyama and his team has sort of reinvigorated him. And he joked, what, you know, was I ready for the grave or something? Like, you know, were you about to put dirt on me? But, you know, he has to be enjoying this young team that he's coaching right now.
I got to give some credit to Kevin Durant, because Kevin Durant had the balls like 1.2 seconds left, and the Suns were up one, and they inbounded Durant, and Keldon Johnson strips him, steals it, and they score, and they win the game. And Frank Vogel after the game said, oh, they fouled him, the refs didn't call it. And, you know, there was some contact there, but I believe Kevin Durant just said, I got to hang on to the ball there.
Yeah.
And it did look like one of those instances, which you see in basketball a lot, where the Suns thought, we have this game won. We don't need to do anything. And they inbound the ball to Durant, and I think Josh Okogie inbounded, and he kind of drifted away like, I don't want the ball. You know, it's like, well, I think, and the Spurs, yeah, they got a favorable whistle because they were the aggressors, but the Suns just gave that one away, a stunner.
A stunner, you know. And, you know, I'll give Kevin Durant some more credit, too, because let's not forget, they're missing Devin Booker and Bradley Beal. And I think it was the Inside the NBA TNT guys or somebody else said, whatever team Kevin Durant goes to, you have a shot. You're in the mix. Like, he's that guy. He's playing, you know, we talked about the Phoenix depth. He's playing with Josh Okogie, Grayson Allen, the corpse known as Eric Gordon, you know. And but yet, they're still competitive, you know. They had a big win the other day, you know, without those guys. They competed hard. And so Kevin Durant sort of legitimizes a franchise. Wherever he goes to, whatever's going on, once they step on the floor, he's going to be A-OK. And tough loss last night, but, you know, it wasn't because of that last strip or anything Kevin Durant did. I think the Spurs, give them credit. They play hard, man. They make the plays. They stayed with it and earned the win.
I just wanted to clarify something backing up here, and I'm not disagreeing with you. I just want to make sure I heard it right. Did you say the corpse, formerly known as Eric Gordon? Did I hear that right? That's what you. Okay.
I feel like Eric Gordon's been going around forever, right? When I was working in Louisville, because he's an Indiana kid, he was, you know, he played for Illinois. I think, like, he's been around forever.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He's been around forever. And so he's still out there doing it. And so, you know, you look at some of his teammates, man, they aren't spring chickens anymore out there.
Yeah, and I know we've talked about this too, but I thought with the new player participation policy, everyone's playing every game. Bradley Beal hasn't played a game yet.
Yeah. What do you think that – see, but that to me, you know, because he hasn't played yet, leads me to believe it's a legit injury, you know? Like, the back is a legit thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if he would have played the opener, sat out the next night, same thing with Devin Booker. Devin Booker is a guy that usually likes to play basketball. He's not one of these load management guys.
He played with a broken nose in the finals with his nose smeared all over his face, yeah.
Exactly. So he's not one of those kind of guys. And so these are clearly, you know, legit injuries. And how about the Joel Embiid? We didn't talk about that yesterday. Joel Embiid, he was going to sit out the home opener, I think it was, in Philadelphia because of rest.
Mm.
But then everybody got on him, got on his case, and then he actually decided to play. And so it's just a joke right now. You don't know who's injured, who's out, who's resting. Clippers are playing their guys tonight. Kawhi, Paul George are both playing, and so
I'll believe that when I see it.
Right? You don't think it may be a late scratch or something like that?
I mean, I hope they play, but we'll see. Yeah. Joel Embiid, by the way, now there's talk that with Harden traded to the Clippers, that maybe the Sixers are going to go out and get somebody to make sure, among other things, that they keep Joel Embiid happy. And they do have the wherewithal in terms of their assets to make a play for somebody. And I think you mentioned this name. The name that I've been wondering about is what about maybe Zach LaVine at some point joining the Philadelphia 76ers?
I would do that move in a heartbeat if I'm Philadelphia. Zach LaVine is exactly what the Sixers need. Maxey's going to be great. We know that. But Zach LaVine is great as well. You know, and now you got three or four guys in that starting lineup, if you want to include Tobias Harris, that can get you not just 15, 20 points. That can get you 30 points. I would do the Zach LaVine deal in a heartbeat. And I would do it also from a Chicago standpoint. Now, I don't know what kind of players the Sixers would have to give up, but if I'm Philly, I'm throwing in at least one first rounder, a pick swap, maybe even a second round, first rounder that's protected. Because if you're Philly, those draft picks that you got in that James Harden trade with the Clippers, those are down the line.
Yeah.
It's not like those are right now. How does that help Joel Embiid? If Joel Embiid could give a rat's you-know-what about those future draft picks, he's trying to win right now. And if you're Philadelphia, that's your most important priority. That's your priority right now, is to make sure Joel Embiid is happy. And if you go out there and you get Zach LaVine, you may not be Boston. You may not be the Milwaukee Bucks, but you're right there with them, in my opinion.
Yeah, you have a guy like Joel Embiid. There aren't many of them. And so when you have him, you got to maximize your chances as long as you have that guy there. So it does make sense. I'm with you. I don't think they're quite as good as Milwaukee or Boston, but they're, you know, they got a puncher's chance, especially if they make a move to bring in more talent. So sure, that seems to be the shrewdest thing, and they're going to get all the way out from under the whole James Harden mess, it would appear. Good for them.
Right, great for them. And if I'm correct, this move frees up some cap space. You know, all the guys they brought back,
yeah,
you know, after this season become free agents. And so if you're Philly, maybe you don't make a move right now during the season. Maybe you do get Zach LaVine. Maybe you do get OG. But if you don't, you still can make a big splash in free agency as well. And so I think the Sixers are well-positioned, much better today than they were 48 hours ago.
Well, speaking of the player participation policy, as we just were, and I'm with you on Bradley Beal. He hasn't played. He has a bad back. I would just wonder if the Suns were aware of that. You know, hopefully they don't have any buyer's remorse, like, oh, we didn't know it was going to be this bad. But it's a long ways to go. My point is this. I know Sam Amick in The Athletic wrote about De'Aaron Fox and his injury and the player participation policy. Do you have any concerns, Kyle, that as Sam suggested, it might be difficult for a guy like De'Aaron Fox to get the rest he needs to fully heal, because he wouldn't necessarily, you know, he might be thinking, wow, I gotta make sure I play 65 games so I have a chance to win the major awards.
Yeah, that is a concern. You know, hopefully this injury won't keep him out that long. You know, he would have to miss 17 games. I mean, that's basically the entire month of November and maybe even into December, if I'm correct.
And but so you don't know what else is going to happen down the road,
right,
too.
You so, don't, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that's 100% too. You know, and then, you know, if let's say he does miss 14, 15 games, then you can't afford to rest him later down the road. He has to play every game. And so, you know, I was thinking about it. You know, this 65 number, while it sounds great in today's day and age in the NBA, I'm not buying it. I think it should be 60, you know, because you got to factor in, like, if you have one injury that takes you out 3 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks, you're missing 10 games, you know, then you're up against it. And so I don't like the 65-game rule. I think it should be 60. You got to allow these guys not only a chance to get injured, but also, like you said, not to feel rushed to come back. And later in the season, as you get older, second night of a back-to-back, to be able to rest.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's ham-handed, and I think it's clearly the NBA trying to impress fans with, look, we're not going to have players resting anymore. Well, what they fail to recognize there is that sometimes it's in – the best interests of the league to have players rest. Sometimes your best players need rest sometimes. And I know as fans, sometimes we don't like to admit that because in the old days, everybody played 82 games. But I right. think the league is just I think they've gone too far in that direction to the point where it could work to the league's detriment this year, especially if you if there's ever a player who's not healthy who decides I'm going to play because I don't want to miss out on the awards. I don't see how anybody really wins in that scenario.
Right, exactly. And then, you know, to an extent, like, you could have a watered-down awards list, if
well,
you
that's
will.
True, too, yeah.
You know, think about it. Let's say Giannis gets hurt or Jokic gets hurt. All of a sudden, your first-team All-NBA is Bam Adebayo or somebody. You know, no offense to Bam, but we know these other guys. And I think it was done a little too hastily. You know, I think 65 is an arbitrary number. And so, at first I was a fan of it, but now that I, look at it a little closer, I'm like, I don't like that.
Yeah, I'm a fan of it in principle,
but I think there was probably
a better way to do it. And I don't know why the players in the league couldn't work together more and maybe do more behind the scenes. Like, look, we need you guys to play more. What's it going to take? What do we have to do? Rather than, well, we're making this. We've got the player participation policy. And, you know, I just don't think ultimately it's in the league's best benefit to take that tack. But we'll see. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. And one other thing on this, Whitey, you know, I need to get to the bottom of, is it the players that is causing this load management? Is it the organization? Is it the medical staff? And so you hear different, you know, when we talk load management, most of the time it's being directed at players. Oh, I don't believe Devin Booker sitting out. Bradley Beal, he hasn't played yet. You know, what if it's the medical staff saying, you know what, take it easy, take some time off. We want to make sure you're healthy down the stretch. And so basically what the league is telling the organizations is, they're telling them how to run their business, how to, best put their teams in position for a championship run. If I'm the Clippers, if I'm the Lakers, especially the Lakers with LeBron James at 38 years old, all those miles on his body, I understand the load management, especially because you want him healthy come the playoffs. And so I feel like the league is sort of overstepping a little bit, and they're telling teams how to run their organization.
And you know why they are this year? Why this year all of a sudden? Why this year?
TV contracts coming up, right?
TV contracts is a big reason, but I also think another reason is the in-season tournament, the commissioner's baby. He doesn't want – this is a crucial Group C game, but LeBron's not playing because of load management. That would just blow up the whole – everyone go, well, that thing doesn't matter then. And I think the league is terrified of that.
You might be right. And that's money. That's messing with the league's money, right? Like, that's their thing, right? Mm-hmm. They rolled out this whole in-season tournament. All the big games going to be – there's a reason why they chose Tuesday and Friday nights.
That's right.
Tuesdays is TNT night. Fridays is ESPN night. And those are the big national TV nights until football ends.
Yeah, absolutely. Coming up next year, the real reason Steph Curry is off to this very hot start. We'll explain it, and we'll see how the Kings can slow him down tonight when we come right back. The Drive Guys on Sactown Sports. I know that Alan Stiles and Chris Watkins today were asking people to share their bold predictions for tonight. Drive Guys here. Kyle's in San Francisco getting ready for the call tonight on NBC Sports California. And it looks like we have a few still trickling in, Kyle. Would you like to hear some of these bold predictions for tonight?
Oh, my gosh.
From some of the best fans in the NBA?
Yeah, let's hear it is.
Artie Castillo says Malik Monk, double-double tonight. These aren't, I'm not saying they're crazy or anything.
That's not too bad.
Manny Too Legit, hot take. Domas getting a triple-double tonight.
All right, that's not I can see that happening.
Your boy Compio says Keegan Murray, 29 points tonight. He also says his cousin will score 13 tonight.
Right.
For
the- Compio, I love it. I love it.
And Ernie also says here, Kevin Herter, 5 threes tonight. I would like to see that.
Kevin Herter, I tell you what, if Kevin Herter hits 5 threes, mark it down, the Kings win. That's a W for Sacramento if Kevin Herter delivers like that. Because then that means he's picking up some of that scoring slack with De'Aaron Fox out.
Yeah, I think I'd 5 would be great. I think I'd settle for 4. 4 would be awesome for Kevin Herter. Just want him to have a good shooting game. Just a game where you go, hey, shot the ball well tonight, right? Especially against the Warriors, and just put this whole whatever it is, slump, whatever, in the rearview mirror. Because the Kings need that to happen as soon as possible.
Yeah, they need to get him going. And, he was 3 for 7 from 3 against the Lakers, 42%. But then when you look at it, he was 1 of 5 from two-point range. And so one of the things that Kevin Huerter can do, he did have 4 assists. It doesn't always have to be feast or famine with him from three. Like, he can do some other things. And so, you know, sprinkle in 3 or 4 threes with a couple of layups, a couple of trips to the foul line, and then bam, just like that, you're at 15, 16 points. It should be, I hate to say it, relatively easy for him. It sounds simple, but for some reason, he has not gotten on track yet.
Yeah, now Greg Bocage Jr.
Oh,
says,
Greg, comment.
Curry, 35 plus, book it.
Who is this guy?
I don't know.
Can we boot him off the YouTube chat?
I mean, I guess we got
Yahoo.
Yeah, he's entitled to his opinion.
No. Dude, if Curry gets 35 plus, that's an L for Sacramento. I said it the other day. The magic number for me is 30 points.
NorCal says, can't stop Curry, but don't let their other players get going, and we can win. What do you think of that, Kyle Draper?
That's if you look at it, their other players didn't get going in Game 7 when he dropped 50 on you. I don't think Klay started getting hot in the third quarter the other day, but it was Steph Curry that really you got to sort of pick your poison, I guess, with this Warriors team. And this is why they're so great, and this is why they've won 4 championships. First of all, you can't stop Steph Curry. You only hope to limit him. Don't let him beat you. But then if you do try to take the ball out of his hands, and this is something we talked about yesterday, Draymond and Klay, they're such a great passing team, they're going to make you pay. And so I don't know how you defend this Warriors team. You got to turn them over, though. I think that's the key. Ball pressure, make them make mistakes, because I don't think you can allow this team to run their offense. They want you to double-team Steph, and Steph is such a willing passer. You double-team him, now you're playing 4-on-3 on the other end, and that's where they kill you at.
Yeah, I think it's almost imperative that you have to shoot a high percentage to keep up with these guys, especially there. And, of course, there are other ways to win, but they showed a blueprint for how you can beat the Warriors for 3+ quarters that overtime, the preseason game, right? Remember, because the Kings were – they had the game and
they were up 18 points.
Right,
in that one.
Right. And then the fourth quarter, they started backsliding, and then it was too late. And the Warriors took over. But if you can shoot a high percentage, you can keep them at bay, and then they're taking the ball out of the bottom of the basket. It's basketball 1A, I know. They start making turnovers. But that's, I think, the most efficient way to beat them. Even then, it's not easy. But Steph Curry this year, as we discussed yesterday, he 4 games in, which isn't many, but still 4 games in, he's taken it, even for him, to a new level. What's going on? I think he has 26 threes in 4 games, and he's shooting better than 47% on threes. Gary Payton explained it. He said, with Chris here, that cuts half of what Steph's got to do, bringing up the ball, going to get it, getting us into offense. We got Chris to do some of that. So by the time the fourth quarter comes late, Steph's got energy. He's still got energy to do what he does. That's another strength for us. Have CP come in, control, handle the ball, and get guys where they need to be, and let 30 just run around. And I hadn't thought of that, but I think there's a lot of truth to that, at least so far.
Yeah, and I didn't, when I looked at the move for CP3, it didn't occur to me that Chris is going to make life easier for Steph Curry.
Right.
Like GP is saying. I mean, Chris Paul, obviously first ballot Hall of Fame guard, he's a guy that can run an offense. And when you watch him, and this is something they didn't have last season, no offense to Jordan Poole, but Chris Paul knows how to deliver a pass on time, on target. And so when Steph is running around, Chris Paul is so great. His basketball IQ is so high. It's sort of like, a quarterback anticipating a receiver's move. Chris Paul anticipates where Steph Curry is going to be, and by the time Steph gets to that spot, the ball is right there. And so they fit in perfectly together. And you can argue this is the first time Steph has played with a real point guard, a guy that actually is feeding him the ball, setting him up. And so it frees him up, like Peyton was saying, to be a scorer. And that's scary for the rest of the NBA.
Isn't it funny? Because, during the summer, we had a conversation. I forget exactly how it started, but I'm sure most people will remember. But it was Magic. Who's a better point guard, Magic or Steph? Well, right now, for many of the minutes that he's on the floor, Steph's not even playing point guard.
Right.
Chris Paul's playing point guard, and it looks like Steph loves it and loves the freedom that that's providing him so far.
Yeah, Chris Paul is playing 30 minutes per game. Steph Curry, 31.8 minutes per game. And so Steph is not your traditional point guard. That's why I never considered him, you know, better than Magic at the point guard spot. He's just a great guard. You know, he's a top five guard in NBA history. You know, point guard, two guard, wherever you want to put him, he's just a great guard. He's not traditional point guard. He's never going to average 10 or 11 assists a game. He's not going to be among the league leaders. He is a scoring guard. And so, no, you're right. And now he's playing alongside Chris Paul. How do you defend them down the stretch? You know, I know the Warriors historically have turned it over. I would imagine down the stretch in close games, having a guy like Chris Paul to settle you down instead of a Jordan Poole out there, you know, I would imagine, you know, as the season progresses, their turnover numbers late in games will go down. And so, you know, that's why I think this move did make them a better team.
How much risk are the Warriors assuming, though? Because let's face it, and I'm not just saying this because the Kings are playing them tonight and boo Warriors, but Chris Paul always gets hurt, right? And he's already proven just a few games in how vitally important he is to them and how well they can play with him. But he always gets hurt. So, I mean, are they just hoping, kind of like the Clippers are hoping with their two guys, especially Kawhi, like, well, maybe this year will be different, right? I mean, that's just his history, especially in the playoffs. Chris Paul gets hurt.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And, you know, he's 38.
Yeah.
A lot of miles on that body. And so that's why I think, you know, sure, the Warriors are playing at a high level, but there will come a point in this season, whether by load management, having to rest them or injury or whatever, where they can't sustain this for 82 games. And so if I'm Golden State, maybe I'm cutting back on Chris Paul's minutes so that he's fresher in the postseason. And so, you know, I think if Chris Paul goes down, he's been phenomenal for them so far this season, no doubt about that. But if he goes down, then they become a much less formidable team, in my opinion. And so, I don't know how long they can keep this up, especially, you know, Chris Paul's what, 38, Klay 33, Steph 35, Draymond 33. So their core, their nucleus, all 33 and above, and that's asking a lot out of these guys.
Here's a bold prediction from Jack. He says, bold prediction, the Kings will actually play defense.
Ooh.
And he's got the, you know, the laughing emoji. Aww. And then Andrew says, do you mean first half or second half? And Jack says, valid question. I'll have to ponder on that. What is that?
Who let those Warriors fans in the chat? Who's let those Warriors fans into YouTube chat? Oh, my gosh.
The only reason I'd even go there is because the Kings played good defense for much of the Laker game. Would you agree?
Yes, I think so. They were aggressive. Sure, the Lakers got to the line. That was a big part of it. But they've made some strides. And, you know, this whole notion, you know, we're joking about the Kings defense. And Mike Brown, they can do it. They actually have the we've seen it before. We've seen them last year. They would have won a top 10 fourth quarter defense in the entire NBA. And so I don't know what it is, why these guys are more consistent defensively, but I know it's a joke right now, but they can play defense.
Mm-hmm. Didn't play much Friday, but that's all right. Tonight's their night. Yeah. When we come back, the beard has landed, and it's all smiles in Clipperland, at least so far. It's next with the Drive Guys on Sacktown Sport. Can the Kings start to even the score against the Warriors tonight? Wouldn't that be nice? Kyle Draper's in San Francisco at Chase Center. He's got the call tonight, as we have reminded you. Make sure you check him out, NBC Sports California. If not, listen on the radio. You want to listen right here. Sacktown Sports. I think this is a really good question, Kyle, and I don't mean to put you on the spot. You may not have this information, but you seem to have access to this type of thing. So Andrew on the chat says, in all seriousness, I'm concerned about the Kings defense in the third quarter. I don't know the numbers, but I'm willing to bet our third quarter defense is low in comparison to the rest of the league. Like I say, I don't know if you have access to that, but does that kind of resonate? I mean, the Kings have had when they played the Warriors, they certainly had a bad third quarter defensively.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I saw that post on the YouTube chat, and I said, you know what, let me look this up.
Ah.
So I was crunching those numbers as soon as you said this. And what's interesting that I found, the Kings are 24th in the NBA in third quarter defensive rating.
Hmm.
Not good at all, right?
Right.
That's pretty bad. But their offensive rating in that third quarter, which is basically points per 100 possessions,
mm-hmm.
26th in the NBA.
Whoa.
So their offense and their defense, trust me, is not good at all in the third quarter. And Andrew's right. But their offense has struggled in the third period as well. 26th in third quarter offensive rating.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
It's not encouraging, but it's very interesting.
Very telling. So, you know, and so you do the math, and I'm doing it right here. I'm on the NBA.com stats site, and you look at the net rating, which combines your defensive and offensive rating and the difference between it, and the Sacramento Kings are 26th in third quarter net rating.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that quarter it has burned them. I mean, that's how the Lakers got back into it and built that lead. The Warriors, obviously, we saw it as well. And so that has to be something Mike Brown talks to his guys about.
Yeah. Obviously, only three games in, and the numbers are kind of wacky still. But, wow, that's I did not realize that. So thank you, Kyle, and thank you, Andrew, for pointing that out. Meanwhile, you know, yesterday we talked a lot about James Harden's going to the Clippers. It's a done deal. And he and P.J. Tucker arrived in L.A., last night, all smiles. Everybody's happy. I know I was concerned about Russ and his role. Not concerned, but I just figured could be impacted. But Russ was asked if he's happy. He's, you know, they can't talk about it or couldn't. Last night wasn't official. But Russ said, yeah, I mean, bleep. Why wouldn't I be happy? Excuse my language, but definitely happy. So how about that? Everyone is just feeling really good about things in Clipperland right now.
Haven't we seen this script before, though, with James Harden?
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at the talent that James Harden has played with in his career. Start off in Oklahoma City when you got Kevin Durant, a young Russell Westbrook, and let's not forget Serge Ibaka at that time.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to Houston, and who does he play with? Well, Carmelo Anthony, if I'm correct, was on that team. Chris Paul was on that team. Russell Westbrook was on that team. And they couldn't get it done. You go to Brooklyn, you got Kyrie and Kevin Durant. You go to Philly, you got Joel Embiid. Everywhere James Harden goes, it's like, great. It's awesome. It's sunshine and rainbows on that first day. And then it's like buying a new car. Let me tell you a quick story, Whitey.
Mm-hmm.
My brother was going into the military. He was moving to Hawaii. He was going to the military. And he said, Kyle, my gift to you is this car. So he gave me his car. It was a cherry red Jeep Cherokee.
Wow.
It was nice.
Yeah.
It was smooth. I was so excited. I was like 20 at the time, something like that. So I was stoked. So I'm dropping my brother off at the airport. He's going to Hawaii, going to be back in the military, do his thing, move, whatever. And so I'm like, yeah, I'm excited. I got this Jeep Cherokee, cherry red, I'm the talk of the town. So I drop him off at the airport. This is in Philadelphia. My mom and dad's house about 20 minutes from the airport. I'm driving back home, and guess what happens to that nice cherry red Jeep Cherokee?
What?
It broke down on the way to my parents' house.
Well, wait,
so I
owned
that
it.
Car.
You
owned that car for about 18 to 20 minutes, and then it broke. That's what James Harden is right now for the Clippers. He's a cherry red, nice, shiny Jeep Cherokee, a new toy that will break down on you when you need it the most, and that's what happened to me.
Wow. Was there any way to salvage the Jeep Cherokee?
Nah, I think it was the transmission or something like that. So.
Oh, man.
So I never forgave my brother for that. Man, he gave me a lemon. But that's what the Clippers are getting in James Harden. He'll be shiny. He'll be great. He'll be nice. He'll do some oohs and ahs for you. But when you need him the most, when it's time to win, it just for some reason doesn't work out.
Hmm.
It didn't work out in Philly. It didn't work out in Brooklyn. in Houston, OKC, you name it. As great of a player as James Harden is, first ballot, surefire Hall of Famer, is always a little something that's not quite right.
Harden and PJ Tucker are not expected to suit up tonight. The Clippers are playing the Lakers. Wouldn't that be great if Harden made his debut? Not expected to. Then they have 4 days off. They open a three-game road swing against the Knicks Monday. So they'll have a few days as kind of an abbreviated training camp for Harden and Tucker. I will say this, though, and I agree with you, and I would not want James Harden anywhere near my team. Anybody who has shown that he is not above actively trying to sabotage what I'm doing for his own purposes. And that's what he's done. I mean, he's been open about it. I don't want that guy anywhere near my team. But he's there. And, you know, if something does click, they have a lot of talent there. And if against all odds they stay healthy, I mean, that could be, right? That could be a pretty good team.
No, but they're sort of like, you know, watching a bad TV show and you know how it's going. It's just going to end poorly, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you got an all-star ensemble. You got an all-star cast, but you know how this story is going to end. It's not going to end well. And that's how I feel about the Clippers. And I love Ty Lue. Ty Lue's one of my guys in the NBA. Nothing bad to say, but he's being dealt a tough hand with the kind of players that he has. Paul George is great. Kawhi is great when they play. James Harden is great when he plays, except in the biggest of moments. And now he has to somehow try to make that work. I don't envy him at all. He is being put in a tough position because if it doesn't work, who are we going to blame?
Mm-hmm.
Like, James Harden, where else is he going to go? I know he could be a free agent after this season.
Well, there
Paul
you go.
Paul George, Kawhi, they can opt out as well. And so this is a major gamble for the Clippers this season.
That, again, it gets back to what we were talking about with Chase Young. There have been rumblings that maybe Chase Young is not a disciplined player. Well, he's got to play well this year. And you could say the same thing about Harden. He's got to play well this year to end up wherever he wants to end up next. Or if he wants to stay, he's got to prove that he's worth the money that he's going to want to stay there. So it's a motivated James Harden. If I'm ever going to take James Harden, which I'm not, but if I ever was going to, it's this James Harden that I would take, which is obviously what the Clippers are doing.
Yeah, and our guy Big Perk, Kendrick Perkins, and Matt Barnes, we've had them on our shows. And one of the things they've both said is that this might be the last opportunity for James Harden. So it's sort of he sort of has to make it work. And if it doesn't work, he can't be the reason it doesn't work. A, because he wants, you know, one more big contract. And B, who else would want him? Like, let's say he does play well. What kind of team would welcome James Harden in? Who could he really help? And so you're right. This is a big year for him, not only contractually, but his standing in the league, man. If he flames out here in the Clippers organization, I don't know where else he goes.
Mm-hmm. You know, if your boy Herter doesn't start making a few I'm kidding, all right? It's
okay,
a joke.
You try to Sacramento Kings fans are trying to drive to the game or drive home. They're about to drive off the road.
It's a joke. We make jokes here. We're just having fun. I don't mean it. I never would want Kevin Durant. Excuse me, James Harden. I love Kevin Durant. Wouldn't ever want James Harden on my team. I was talking to Jerry today, doing our podcast. Jerry Reynolds, who's going to be in Friday because you're going to be traveling, he says Kevin Durant to him. He says, Kevin Durant's great. He says he just doesn't look like quite the same player, and I think I agree with that. I think the injury, he's great, but he's not what he was. I think the injuries have taken a little bit out of KD.
Really? You guys think that?
He's phenomenal, and I love him. But he's, you know, it's, I mean,
I mean, of course he's not the same player he was with the Warriors when they were winning back-to-back titles and he was finals MVP, but he's still pretty damn good.
Yes.
And you look at who he hasn't even played with any of the stars yet. He played one game with Devin Booker. Like, I want to see him surrounded with Devin Booker and Bradley Beal. And to me, Kevin Durant is the kind of player, he plays his best on the biggest of stages as well. And so, you know, you got a guy that's been in the league forever. When did he come in? 2007, I think it was. And so he's been around, you know, 16 years in the league. And so he can ho-hum get you 25 points. And so I sort of disagree. I think he's still a top 10 player in this league, top six, top seven player in this NBA. I said it earlier. Any team he goes to instantly gets credibility. There, you know, this guy does not miss the playoffs. It's not like LeBron with the Lakers a few years ago when they, you know, struggled to 36 wins or 37 or whatever it was. Like, wherever Kevin Durant goes, they are in the mix.
We're going to talk a little bit more about Durant, another point of the show. I know yesterday we were trying to figure out where you place him all time, and I'll prove to you that I'm a big KD guy. I got a KD take that I think is going to make a lot of people angry, and I don't think you're going to agree with it. I could be wrong.
Okay.
It's definitely a pro KD take, though, okay? So I don't want you to think I'm anti-KD. I am anti-Harden, but I'm, you know, anybody, KD, whoever it is, if their initials are KD, I'm
okay,
on board.
All right,
right?
I appreciate that.
You know
that.
Yeah. We touched on this earlier. When we come back, we will look again at the single biggest surprise of this NBA season so far. We're just getting started here in this NBA season. That's next. Drive Guys. Pompeo is coming after me on the chat. That's all right. I love it. Drive Guys here. Kyle Draper's in San Francisco at Chase Center, where the Kings take on the Warriors tonight. I'm here in our Sacramento studios on the chat. Pompeo says, Whitey, when he was young, he was a big fan of George Mikan. wasn't really a Mikan guy. Not really a Mikan guy, Pompeo. But I'll tell you what, George Mikan is my cousin. How about that? Did you know?
Ouch. Back at you, Pompeo.
Did
take
you know that?
That?
Yeah. By the way, here's one of my favorite trivia questions. George Mikan, his rookie year with what? Minneapolis Lakers.
Yep.
How many rebounds did he average?
They didn't keep rebounds back then.
That's exactly right. Isn't that great? Yeah,
who
total
do you
rebounds.
Think I am, man. You think I'm some amateur?
Nobody knows. 28 points, rebounds.
He might average 50 rebounds a game. We just don't know, right?
Hey, I know I said we're going to talk about the biggest surprises in the NBA, which we will get to. But Jay lined something up here, and I know we talked about it earlier. I wanted to share it with you, Kyle. The whole thing with Jerry Jones today doing his radio show. Jerry Jones and the Cowboys. How about them Cowboys? Getting ready to play the Eagles this week. Big game, right? So here's what Jerry Jones, owner of the Cowboys, had to say on his own radio show in Dallas today about this upcoming matchup.
This is easy for me to say, but this is serious that we're dealing with up here, Sunday man. We've got to really have our game face on, and Philadelphia is a tough place to get your momentum going, but it's all there. And to me, this is all about just what the NFL can be.
That's Jerry Jones, and I apologize, wow. Jason. That was actually yesterday. Thank you, Jay.
Eagles.
I've never
60,
heard that before.
Right? Eagles. I'm taking the Eagles no matter the line on this one. They're already defeated. They're already expecting a butt kicking. I love it. I love it.
I guess you would, especially when he says, yeah, in Philadelphia.
Exactly.
Yeah, playing there.
He's already
that's
shook.
Tough. Yeah. But I've
been telling Niners fans this all season. The Link is a house of horrors for opposing teams. The Cowboys are about to experience it. The Niners experienced it in an NFC championship. That is not an easy place to play. So Jerry's just keeping it real.
Maybe. I think Jerry may be giving you the old okie doke. Where he's just sandbagging you.
Sandbagging.
We're a serious bleep, fellas. And he's got reason to think his Cowboys. Dak is like... He's got a really impressive – is it he's undefeated against the Eagles in the regular season or something like that. He owns – Dak Prescott owns the Philadelphia Eagles.
Nah. The Eagles beat him once last season, didn't they? Or was Dak out that game? Maybe he missed the game last year.
I saw something that led me – because I didn't really believe it, maybe I –
Right.
I can't believe that.
And
he's
maybe
played well
that,
against your
no,
team.
Because you know what? I was in Texas, in Dallas – in Jerry's world, when the Eagles came there and put the smackdown on Dak and the boys a few years ago, right before the pandemic. So now I know he may play well. You know, I have to look up the numbers, but we got him before, too. It ain't that lopsided now.
Yeah, let's see. Dak Prescott against the Eagles.
Exactly.
I got it here, but I'm not going to waste it. 8-3. Dak is 8-3 versus the Eagles in his career. Woo!
Woo!
Yeah. It is all over.
It's all over. I'm not worried about the Cowboys at all. They're a bunch of front runners. They're soft. They're paper thin. And so all you got to do is get up on them 7-0, 10-0, and it's a wrap. So I'm not even worried about this game this week.
Hey, Kyle, not to just apologize for shifting gears here, but Jay just let me know we have a death in the world of basketball. The great Bobby Knight has passed away. We just
no
got word.
Way.
Yeah. Basketball coach of great Bobby Knight has passed away at the age of 83. Again, I apologize for throwing that at you here
wow.
in the middle. We're having fun talking about football. But, yeah, breaking news. The sixth winningest coach in Division I men's college basketball history, Bobby Knight passing away at the age of 83. A true, no matter what you thought of Bobby Knight, an absolute legend.
Unbelievable. And I had a chance to cover Indiana basketball. This was after Bob Knight, Mike Davis took over after Bob Knight was let go, but he was still very much a part of Indiana basketball. And, you know, I worked in Louisville, and he would come down and speak to groups and everything. And you can't argue with the coaching in terms of the wins and losses as a head coach. One of the more impactful coaches in all of college basketball.
Mm-hmm. And
wow.
Yeah, ESPN pointing out that Bobby Knight became the youngest coach at a Division I school in 1965. He broke in at Army at age 24,
yeah.
Made his mark, of course, 29 years at Indiana, including winning a school record 661 games, reaching the NCAA tournament 24 times in 29 seasons. And his first championship came in 1976 when Indiana went undefeated.
Undefeated team, if I'm correct.
No team has accomplished that since. In 84, coached the U.S. Olympic team to the gold medal in Los Angeles. And then, of course, eventually forced out at Indiana in 2000 for violating a zero-tolerance behavior policy by grabbing the arm of a freshman student who said greeted him by his last name. We've lost Bobby Knight.
And Bob Knight, you know, responsible for Mike Krzyzewski.
Yes.
Mike Krzyzewski started out as an assistant with Bob Knight at Army, if I'm correct. And mm-hmm. you know, we know what Coach K has accomplished in the game of basketball. And so, wow, RIP to Bob Knight. One of the most influential men in college basketball, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bobby Knight then went on.
Still the same guy that cut Charles Barkley from the Olympic team.
That's
sorry,
right.
Whitey,
that's
to,
right.
to interrupt you. But Charles Barkley talks often about that. You know, he didn't make the Olympic team, and Bob Knight cut him that 84 squad.
Yeah, it's, you know, if you're being honest here, what do you remember about Bob Knight? And you mentioned that, you know, the 76 team, we talked about that 76 team undefeated, but the temper and the chair throwing, I mean, it's right up there, right? You just can't help it. Oh, yeah.
That's the first thing, right?
Yeah.
That's part of it, you know. And Neil Reed was the player. He choked also. Remember the video of mm-hmm. him grabbing a player's neck? Neil Reed, the former IU basketball player. And so Bobby Knight, you know, is one of those polarizing figures because when I worked in Louisville, which is right on the border between Kentucky and Indiana, there's still a segment that reveres Bob Knight. And even when he was let go and even, you know, when all the controversy came, you know, there were some who still wanted Coach Knight to be the head coach at IU.
Mm-hmm. Bobby Knight, let's see here. This would have been January of 2007. He passed Dean Smith as then the winningest Division I men's coach. He got career win number 880, and I mention that because, as ESPN reports, to celebrate that, Bobby Knight chose to sing the song My Way by Frank Sinatra, and he explained why it was fitting, and he says, I've simply tried to do what I think is best. Regrets, just like the song, I have regrets. I wish I could have done things better at times. I wish I would have had a better answer, a better way at times. But just like he said, I did it my way. And when I look back on it, I don't think my way was all that bad. End quote. Bobby Knight, who we've lost today at the age of 83.
Wow. Yeah. And he stuck with it, you know, like he was unapologetically mm-hmm. himself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Till the very end. Yeah.
Yeah, things have changed. I mean, he's just a guy who's was a living symbol of how things change, our views of coaches and the things that coaches were allowed to do. And I like to think maybe we got a lot more enlightened and realized, you know, some of that stuff, maybe that's your way, but that's not the way we're doing it anymore. He was caught up in the middle of that, but still one of the greatest college basketball coaches of all time.
Yeah, and he's really, you know, a microcosm of society, right? Like, how many things in our lives and in our society do we used to do back in the 60s, 70s, 80s that, you know, would be, you know, you know, canceled. You know, you look at a show like All in the Family with Archie Bunker, right? Like some of the things that were said on that show, and that was a family program that you saw night in
right.
and night out.
Right.
And so, you know, times have changed. And with that, you know, you hope people change as well, but I don't know if Coach Knight ever did.
Here's the cool thing. He was at odds with Indiana after they dismissed him. He won 661 games there, mm-hmm. and he would not show up at functions or reunions, anything. He didn't want any part of that. But it changed in recent years. In 2019, he made a surprise appearance at an Indiana baseball game. And then in July, he bought a house near the arena. And in February of 2020, Bobby Knight finally returned to Assembly Hall for an Indiana-Purdue game. And he was met with roars of approval from the sold-out
wow.
crowd, including dozens of former players. He walked in with his son, Pat. He hugged Isaiah Thomas. He was assisted into the arena by Quinn Buckner, and he reveled in the moment. So really, you know, a nice way for him to wrap up his Indiana career and eventually be at peace with the good and the bad of all of it. And obviously, from a basketball standpoint, it was mostly good as far as the winning went.
Yeah, what, 1976, 1980, 81 also, I believe, Indiana with Isaiah Thomas made it to the championship game as well. And so, mm-hmm. no, he definitely had a tremendous run as a coach at IU.
Yeah. By the way, Isaiah Thomas to me is one of the most underrated great players of all time.
Yeah. You know, and I 100%, well, that's because of Michael Jordan, right?
Yeah.
You know, like the whole, you know, he should have been on the Olympic team in 1992. He should have been on that dream team. Two-time champ, you know. He was one of the best guards in the NBA. And I could argue he would be even better in today's NBA. Mm-hmm. Like, he was mm-hmm. one of the prototypical scoring guards back then.
Yeah, you're right, though. It's like, yeah, he's Isaiah Thomas, but he's not Larry Bird. He's not Michael Jordan. He's
right.
not Magic Johnson. I know, but wow. It's not his
right.
fault he played in
it's
that
not,
era.
Right, and right. But he was on that next tier, right?
Yeah.
Right now, you know.
Yeah.
And he's the only guy to beat Jordan, beat Magic, mm-hmm. and beat Bird in a playoff series.
When we come back... Kyle Shanahan says the 49ers looked slow and tired on game film. So how much can their new acquisition help with that? And, of course, more on the Kings and the Warriors with Kyle down there at Chase Center. It's a Drive, guys, on Sacktown Sports.